Welcome to Seagull Eagle, the show where we talk football like experts and then immediately prove that we're not. What have we learned this week?
Well, at Brighton, results aren't going our way. Even Hurzler's struggling for words, while the team is struggling for points. And is our squad really as big as Andy makes out?
This week at Palace, our first win in Europe and a draw with Forest. Eze finally departs for Arsenal. Mark Gaye actually decides he wants to be a WWE wrestler. And let's not forget Glasner, who's threatened to get his own boots on if Paris doesn't sign anyone soon. We'll also dive into the comings and goings, who's confirmed, and who's just signed for another club instead of Palace.
Because this is Seagull Eagle. Hello, Andy.
Evening, Neil. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad, mate. Not too bad. Had a busy day, you know.
Have you?
Yeah, I shipped my son off to university digs. So he's off sharing a flat now with about six other people. So that should be fun for him.
Oh, that explains the tear in your eye when I turned up. I thought you were just glad to see me. Oh, well, no, that's good, mate. That's good. And it's been a lovely weekend, isn't it? Bank holiday today.
Oh, loved it. Loved it. The sun's been out. It's been a nice weekend in that sense. I just wish I hadn't turned the TV on.
Well, yeah. I wasn't going to start this early.
No, let's not.
How's the relegation zone doing?
Shut your face. Just shut it. Look, there's only one place to start this week, and it has to be the one game that I was really looking forward to that I couldn't go to, and that's El Clasico, as it was labelled.
Yes, and Neil, there is a confession to make. I didn't realise why you messaged me with the name El Clasico. I thought you were talking about El Clasico or something, as in like the classic game.
Yeah.
And when they talked about it on Match of the Day, they mentioned the Clasico, and I had this penny drop, light bulb moment, where I was like, that's what Neil meant. So there we go. Well, thick me. But yes, our first home game of the Premier League season. And actually, Neil, here's a confession from a Palace fan.
All right.
Something we're not very good at.
Blimey.
Right.
Hold the phone. Go on.
No, we're not very good at opening games of the season at home.
The
stats say, what is it, 12 out of, I think, the last 16 seasons, we've lost our first home game.
Oh, okay.
Right? So, and I think the other stats are something like we failed to score in our last 8 out of 9 of them as well.
Oh, right. Okay.
Right? So when you're a Palace season ticket holder and you turn up with all this optimism of the season,
yeah,
we normally walk home in, like, with the ump.
Yeah, I get you.
So, and obviously the other thing is Forest are a bit of a bogey team for us, believe it or not.
I heard that before, actually. I didn't realise that you had such poor results against them.
I didn't until I did a bit of research. It makes sense when you think about the fact that we play a very similar style and all the other bits and pieces. But we haven't won in 10 previous Premier League games at Forest. That's the longest kind of unsuccessful run out of any team in the Premier League that we play against. We've drawn 6... and we've lost 4. So we've only lost, we've lost less than half of them, but we love drawing a game with Forest.
Gotcha.
Hence why all the bookies were going for a draw. The last 4 home games we played with them, they've all finished level, mate. So, I mean, it was destined for a snooze-off.
Obviously on the pitch maybe, but I was more hopeful that it might be a bit more, life, let's say, in the crowd, in the boardroom, maybe.
Well, I mean, I did take a good look around when we got there, and to be fair, look, there was a heightened police presence. There was a lot of bright fluorescent yellow jackets everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
But there was no trouble from what I saw, and I think a lot of that was due to the fact that Mr. Marantouakis didn't turn up.
Did he not?
As far as I'm aware, he did. And if he did, he went in disguise.
Wow.
As I say, no trouble, apart from a few moments that we'll talk about later. There was a wonderful TIFO that was done at the start as the players were walking out.
Oh, really?
We had all the fireworks going off and the light show and all the other stuff goes on. But then, of course, there was this TIFO that, I don't know if you remember, the Palace fans raised quite a lot of money, which we were hoping to... unveil a TIFO at Wembley at the Community Shield.
I remember you saying,
they put a stop to that because they were a little bit scared. I think probably their fears were quite right, but they were a little bit scared about what potentially we might have done.
Right.
The reality is actually what we were planning was something quite nice, and it was a massive image of Joel Ward holding the FA Cup with the words "Crystal Palace, built from glass, etched in silver," and it was actually genuinely impressive. There were like men with hard hats at the top of the Holmesdale stand, like hoisting this thing up with like ropes, choreography, the whole shebang. So obviously the club were fully supporting it and helping at the same time. And it was a sight to see. It was genuinely quite impressive and kind of quite right that we celebrated the first home game with everything that's been achieved. So there we go. Talking about lineups. Pretty much as expected. I mean, I think we've only got about 14 players, and that's not even a joke, I think, when you take out the youth team. So Deveni was in for Eze again.
Yeah.
And Mitchell regained his starting position over Sosa, who played midweek. Richard started back in defence in place of Lerma, who played midweek. So I think Glasner, bless him, is trying to do some kind of squad rotation here with the three options that he's got. So look, how I would sum this game up quite simply is I think Palace won the first half. And I think that is obvious. We had the ball. We created some great chances. We were the team that had the upper hand. We looked sharper. And then I think Forest got the better of us in the second half. They had the ball more. And we clearly got tired because it was something like our fourth game in 8 days or something.
That's why you need a bigger squad, Andy.
Well, we need a squad. I mean, I don't think you can really take the mick out of me on that one because I'm agreeing with you, my friend. But yeah, I think all in all, really, I think the draw felt fair. I didn't walk out of there gutted. I would have loved to have won, though. Genuinely would have loved to have won. Look, first half, as I said, I think we're the most threatening of two sides. Looked quite comfortable on the ball. And I was actually a little bit disappointed with Forest because all of this hype and their previous, you know, romp of a first game that they had, they were coming out of the blocks quick normally. Yeah. And they didn't. And obviously, Sarr's opening goal, it was a Daniel Muniz cross. Exactly what every Palace fan needed right then. Celebrated hard. I had to remember very quickly that I was actually sat in the assistance area because of my leg, because I couldn't bend my leg enough to sit in my seat, and had to very much dole down my celebrations before anybody said, he can walk, which I didn't want to happen. Gaye obviously also hit the near post just before half time as well. So really, we could have gone into the break 2-0 up, is the truth.
Okay.
Second half, Forest came out fine. Quite what Nuno said. Maybe he was like, look, guys, this is my last game.
Do it for me.
They made a significant amount of changes off their bench.
I was literally going to talk about this.
Yeah.
We talked about Palace never ending, obviously, over the last few weeks with the constant rumours, but no actual squad increases.
Yeah.
And then you look at Forest and their ability to recruit very quickly when they had their decision sorted. They got Callum Owendo, the striker, came on. Igor Jesus came on. Omari Hutchinson, I forgot he signed from Ipswich. He came on. James McAtee from Man City.
Yeah.
He came on.
He was annoying me, actually. He stood right in front of me warming up and blocking my view for the whole first half.
Should have asked him to move.
Many Palace fans did.
I bet.
And obviously, they've got the Dan Andoy, who was Palace linked, and we didn't act quick enough, and he ended up at Forest. A little bit easier, I would say, potentially, if you've got Europa League football to attract some of these names. But there we go. That Dan Andoy did look pretty good. But what was interesting is that the usual suspects at Forest that terrify and scare everybody, I think, were pretty much dulled throughout that game.
Right.
So I think in terms of tactics, Glasner got it pretty spot on with the options that we had. What our biggest issue, obviously, was that fatigue set in. Without any options on the bench like Forest did. It wasn't the normal of old Palace survival at the end, but I'll be honest, when that whistle did go, I was a little bit like, okay, great, draw a line under it, move on.
Yeah, it was the archetypal game of two halves, wasn't it, really? And I think that ability to freshen your team come the last half an hour of a game just completely ran rings around Palace a little bit in that last 20 minutes. Yeah. But ultimately though, you still managed to get a point. And I think the goal for Palace, I was going to pick up on something actually when you talked about that. I thought it was a lovely move all the way around. It was a very Crystal Palace move, if that makes sense.
We looked sharp.
Yeah, exactly. Quick passing out to the wing backs. And I thought it was, you know, both wing backs were involved in that sense as well. I thought it was excellent. The pass from Wharton, again, it's annoying how good he is at those quick passes.
That's why we were in Madrid, wasn't it?
Yeah, I can understand it. Like his ability just to understand the weight that's needed on a pass, not just the accuracy. The weight is something that goes under the radar a little bit sometimes. And the speed and the weight that he put on that pass to Munoz was just perfect for him.
It was.
So it was a really good goal, I thought. And then, yeah, as I say, from my perspective, you could see it as well. It was the second half, a lot more Forest involved. And they had probably the better quality of chances through the second half in that
sense.
Yeah,
they did. Annoyingly, their goal that they scored, though, like Henderson normally pulls off these wonderful saves.
Yeah,
And he just, instead of putting his hands that side, he put his feet that side.
Yeah, I thought he'd be a bit disappointed with that.
I think he will be.
You shouldn't really let a goal in on your inside your post in that sense.
I think he clearly thought it was going to the other side and obviously realised last minute. But do you know what? I think there was some, it's probably quite controversial, but I like the Hughes and Wharton thing in midfield,
right?
And it's not often we get to start a game with Hughes normally comes on in the second half, so I think that, and that a lot of it was why the disruption in the midfield was kind of, it was tight, it was focused, it was pressing, and I think that's why I think we got off the blocks quick. I think where it failed was you'd got to do that over 90 minutes, right? And when you've already played a couple of games, I think the one thing, and I want to be careful with what I'm saying here,
okay?
Because he's a kid, but right. Deveni,
yeah,
right. Obviously, he scored the winning goal at Wembley.
Yeah, I mean, you've been heaping praise on him recently, saying he's a great prospect,
mate, and he is
right.
And I want to clarify that.
Okay.
Right? I don't want any hate from any of the Palace fans saying that I'm digging him out. I'm not.
Okay.
Point I want to make, though,
you're going to dig him out.
No. The point I want to make is about the fact that we as a club shouldn't be putting pressure on our previous under-21 captain, who only made it into the team 9 months ago or something. He's now ended up playing international football for Ireland. He's pretty much a starter for us now because he used to play back up to Eze. He used to get 10 minutes in a game after Eze got tired or whatever. And I'm going to level with you. He had a stinker in this game.
Yeah.
He did have a stinker in this game because it's a tough game, right? Unlike the other style of play that we would normally play against other teams.
Yeah.
He just didn't have the best game. He was subbed off after 60 minutes. I'll be honest with you, because I was sat like front row for this game, I didn't really get the full perspective as to how much of a stinker he had in this game from where I was sat until I rewatched it back and looked at the stats. He only had 32 touches. He lost possession 11 times, Neil.
Wow.
27% dual completion rate, 70% pass accuracy. That's unusual for him. That's
the thing. With young players, inexperienced players, they're going to have bad games.
Well, and also, if you think about the system is so well rehearsed and so put together.
Yeah.
Everyone around him almost thinks they're passing it to Eze and thinks that next ball is going to come from Eze. And now it's Deveni. And he hasn't got that same flair as Eze would have or whatever it would be. So, look, I think what this does prove is not about the fact that Eze was, you know, an integral part of our team and that we can't replace him or whatever. We can't replace him with Deveni. Deveni is and will be a brilliant player. Someone else has got to come in and fill that void.
Yeah.
Sarr, again, though, was superb. Do you remember I said in a couple of podcasts ago when Eze was being linked away and I was like, I'd be more upset if Sarr was going.
Yeah, I get
genuinely
you.
Believe that, right? And he was superb again, caused constant problems for Nico Williams and Murillo, dropping off into midfield, but also offering that attacking threat as well, right?
He's
got the best of both worlds. He knows what he's doing.
He's a hard worker, isn't he?
Mate, he's brilliant. Yeah. And he's just so quiet about it. Scored the opener. And to be fair, would have been awarded a penalty if he hadn't strayed offside in that build-up to that right at the end of the game as well. So he could have won it for us, I think. He was a couple of inches off in the build-up.
So what about, obviously, I know we make a joke about the limited squad that you've got.
Yeah.
Obviously, Deveni went off. Who went on, did you say?
Eze.
So what was he like?
Oh, well, this is the thing. This is the last thing that I really wanted to say about this was that whilst we learned that Deveni potentially wasn't the direct replacement, I think what we have learned is that potentially Eze is the replacement.
Okay.
Quite nicely for Eze. Eze. Nearly wear the same shirt, can't they? But he only got 30 minutes. Now, remember, this is the kid that got subbed as a sub. Do you remember?
Yeah. I do.
And he's had his hand slapped. And he's been kicked about a bit, I think, because obviously I think there was an element of the manager going, can I trust you? Can I trust you to play this system? And he's had to sit a little bit of it out, and he's waited patiently, and he's now, and we knew he would, right? Because I put him down as my kind of big shining light for this year, like the one that's going to prove himself. And for them 30 minutes that he played against Nottingham Forest, I genuinely believe he did. He had great flashes of promise. And proved, or to be fair, I think he almost, when Devenny came off, he almost showed that how bad a game Devenny was having.
Do you get
what I mean?
He's
proved he's got technical ability, skill, composure. The Premier League on their social medias this week have been showing essays, flamboyant step overs and all that kind of stuff in the Forest game. Like, he's already made it there. All he's got to do, truthfully, he's got to win back the manager's trust and kind of prove that he can play that system. And I really hope that, Glasner trusts him to do that, because I actually think we've got an identity at Crystal Palace, and we'll talk about this a bit later, but we've got an identity of bringing through them kind of South London players with flair, and we've had a great track record of that. Roman Essay is one of them players we've already got in our ranks.
He
just needs to, well, hopefully he's grown up a little bit now and worked out what he can and can't do, and it's not about him and it's about the team. But I think this will be his season, and I actually think, I really hope that on Thursday, Fredrikstad away, this guy gets the opportunity to show what he can do.
But so overall then, that game, I mean, you've left with a point.
Look, four competitive games so far this season. Two wins, two draws. I think we're doing all right.
Yeah.
We've got an unbeaten run. In fact, I think we're doing more than all right now. We've got an unbeaten run of 12 competitive games in all competitions. Right?
That's pretty good.
Our longest run without losing for 35 years, Neil. 35 years, right?
Yeah.
So you mentioned a few times, and I am going to dig you out here, because you're like a kind of tabloid newspaper over that side of the room sometimes.
Tabloid.
You're like, club in crisis, Crystal Palace, blah, blah, blah. No, mate. If this is what a club in crisis looks like, I think we're doing all right. And on that note, how was the Everton game, Neil?
Oh, Andy, I'm pleased for you. I really am.
Tell us about the Everton game. First new game in that stadium.
Oh, should we just move on? I'm happy to talk about the rest of the Premier League.
No, I think we need to go for it in great detail.
Do you know what, Andy? If you spoke to me straight after the game...
I wanted to. Yeah, I didn't answer my phone. I was in a foul mood, an absolute foul mood. And I think you know me long enough now. I'm generally quite a level-headed person. I'm quite balanced in my opinions. Yeah. Even when it comes to football, I can understand like the bigger picture. But after that game, I was so angry and frustrated. And I'll tell you for why in a minute. I'll get to it. But let me just go through the game in a snapshot, if I can.
Yeah.
So first things first, we need to talk about the lineups. Because obviously Brighton haven't quite perfected yet an actual lineup that we expect to see every week. We've had a couple of run-ins with Wolfsburg and Fulham, the first game of the season. They were the same, essentially. So I was thinking, okay, we'll go with the same again, probably knowing Hörsler. He won't change it. He'll just go for it. Even though I wanted to see Welbeck up front with Jorginho Rutter just behind him. That's what I personally wanted. So the lineups come out. Welbeck up front.
Well, you haven't got that many options up there, have you?
Jorginho Rutter, not in the squad.
Why?
Yeah, well, that's what we were all thinking. As we all know, Fabian Hörsler in his press conference says everything's fine 2 days before. And then lo and behold, that freaky Friday happens again where suddenly we're missing half the squad. Well, this week it was Jorginho Rutter's turn to get a slight knock, which takes him out of the game completely, by the way. If you've got a slight knock and don't make the bench, to me, that's not just a slight knock, is it? So, yeah, Jorginho Rutter injured. Okay, I'll stay strong, fine. Who have we got in his place? Well, we'll put O'Reilly there. He's played there the last couple of games. Fine, okay, we'll see what happens. Apart from that, no other changes. Now, the first 20 minutes was pretty much what you'd expect to see, I would say, even though the stadium was full of expectation, and it's a beautiful stadium, by the way. I don't know if you saw the pictures. It looks wonderful.
Oh, it does.
Out on the docks and that. It's very picturesque.
Very steep.
Yeah. And it looked wonderful. It looked like a really big, sort of great occasion. And I was really looking forward to Brighton being the party poopers, you know? And the first 20 minutes went sort of how I expected it to go. Lots of possession for Albion. There were two really good chances in that first 20 minutes.
So the first one was, I don't know if you saw it, but there was a big long ball over the top for a change. And every so often we do that and Matoma tries to get onto the end of it. He did that again on Sunday. Got onto the end of a long ball, controls it, flicks it over the two defenders and then waits for it to come down, volleys it. And I'm thinking this is just one of those Matoma moments again. But unfortunately, it hits the top of the bar rather than goes in. And it was a wonderful idea, but it just didn't quite come off.
Very impressive, though.
It was. It was lovely to see. And he's got that in his locker, but we haven't seen enough of that yet this season. But still, it was there and it was early in the game. And I was thinking, OK, we're on it. We're going for this. 2 minutes later as well, we get the second chance, which is the situation where, Yankuba Minta went down the right wing, crosses it over, but crosses it behind Welbeck, and he's in front of the goal, and he sort of tries to get it back from behind him and kick it in. He hits it over the bar, over the crossbar. So it was very frustrating, but two good chances. And I'm thinking, okay, well, you know, we're creating. One of them will go in eventually. Little did I know. And then, really, the frustration sort of started to creep in because we kept the ball for the ball's sake. We didn't really do much with it after that. Yeah. We were, you know, we were keeping the ball nicely. We were passing it around. Every time Everton got the ball, the crowd got up, obviously. They had two fantastic footballers on the pitch in Ndai and Grealish, either side. Ndai just kept coming in. I love watching him play.
He's a great player.
He's just so quick and agile and he just has fire in his belly, you know, when he gets the ball. And every time he got the ball, De Kuyper, I think, got his first taste of proper Premier League football. I think he found it a really tough day. And it's going to be the start of a real steep learning curve for him, I think, this week. It was De Kuyper in some respects that I think was, if I was going to blame anyone, probably blaming him for the Everton first goal.
It's a shame because, I mean, he could do no wrong last week when we were talking about him.
Attacking-wise, I don't think he can. I think he's fantastic going forward. There's something he's got to learn trying to defend. And the goal that Everton scored, it was a great move. And Ndai, you know, jinking around, getting the ball across to, I think it was Dewsbury Hall, who eventually got it across to Grealish. Grealish gets down, does the thing that Grealish does, gets to the byline, gets it across, and then dies on the far post, puts it in. Now, looking back on the replay, De Kuyper does all the hard work in sprinting back and getting to Ndoye. And as he gets there, it's almost as if in his head he goes, "Ah, oh, I've done my bit. I've done that. I've achieved that. Tick." He gets to Ndoye, and then he looks at Grealish, and he watches Grealish with the ball, rather than watching what's happening to Ndoye. And as soon as he realises he's taken his eye off Ndoye, Ndoye's gone past him, round the back post, and he scored. And it's those little things that make such a big difference in a game. And it was a turning point because the rest of the crowd got up and the rest of the half was very much more even, I would argue. We still created quite a few chances. And there were a few times, I think, where we then keep the ball. We just want to make sure we've got the ball. So we try and calm everyone down again and we slow it down and we try and sort of keep passing the ball. But some of our midfielders were a little bit wasteful. You know, Baleba, he didn't have a good half. He was clumsy. He lacked a bit of focus, something that I labelled him last season. I said he's fantastic, but he has a lot to learn still. He has concentration issues, in my opinion. And, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why he's not ready for a big move. Because when you watch the game, that first half, you could see as soon as the goal went in as well, he just wasn't in it. He wasn't paying attention.
There was a lot of news outlets suggesting that he was ready for a big move and that was why he was subbed off.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not that. You could see the quality of play from last week. Yeah. He was fantastic. To this week, head.
Well, I mean, what does that say about Herzl, though, that you're potentially taking off your best player when you're 1-0 down against Everton? And let's be honest, Jack Grealish, who's gone missing for however long at Man City, you guys made him look good.
Yeah, he wasn't bad, to be fair. But look, Baleba got taken off at half-time, and I think that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, I think sometimes players need to realise it's not all about them.
Yeah.
They brought on Jack Hinshelwood, and we passed the ball a lot better in the second half. We kept the ball in an attacking sense a lot better. I appreciate we still didn't score, but my point being the actual way that we contained the game was a lot better, a lot sensible. Before the end of the first half, We did have a couple more chances. Van Hek hit the post from far out.
Yeah.
I think Tarkowski passed the ball back to Pickford or tried to, and O'Reilly was in that hole. And I thought, well, there you go. Open goal, O'Reilly. Do it. Nothing. Still couldn't pass the goalkeeper or pass it back to Welbeck, who was in an open space. I'm very frustrated at this point at halftime because you can see it. Like, you can see the way we're playing. It's almost, but not quite. You know, sort of feeling. It was like a 50% performance where nothing was quite gelling. And Everton were doing the things that Everton do. You know, they were working hard. They were getting up on their feet. They were challenging for every ball. They'd scored a goal and they were making sure that they weren't going to concede another one.
Well, this is a new revived Everton, right? This isn't the Everton that was struggling for points last year.
No, I agree.
It's a team who have got it in the locker.
And they've got that fantastic stadium to play for. They've got all those people in front of them. And they were as soon as they scored that goal, you could see it. The whole of the team just grew.
Yeah.
And it was our fault for letting that happen.
Mm.
Second half, so Hertzler makes that change. As I said, Belaiba goes off, Hinshelwood comes on. And I'm presuming it's there, as I said, to try and improve that passing into the front players, to try and give them a better quality of chance. Heaven knows we had enough chances in the first half. But we concede straight away. And to be fair, it was a brilliant goal. I mean, I don't think there was any problem with it from a Brighton perspective. You know, it just one of those
goal.
Passes it back. You don't expect someone to score from there. He had a foot wide gap to shoot into and he did it. Mm. It was just a fantastic finish. 2-0 down. And to be honest, I never really felt after that like we were going to get back into the game.
And oh, really? You wrote it off?
No, I did write it up. Mm. Even to the point of when we got the penalty, which I can see why they gave it, but I could also see why they wouldn't give it. It was one of those sort of, it was going to go either way.
Yeah.
When we got it, I actually wrote on the WhatsApp group of my friends, I put, we're not going to score this. Because just you can feel the way the game was going.
Also, to be fair, Welbeck had an absolute stinker there because I watched it back quite a few times, actually. Because the first time I watched it, I was like, that's a really bad penalty.
Yeah.
Like, it's a really bad penalty. Second time I watched it, I was like, wow, that's an awful penalty.
It is.
And the reason why is because his whole body and his foot tells the keeper exactly where it's going before he's even hit that ball.
So Welbeck's done that style of penalty a few times in his last few pens. He's done it to success, to be fair. He's scored, I think, all of them.
Oh, well.
But it's the way that he does it that if he's wrong, he's wrong. In other words, if the goalkeeper guesses with that style of quick part, he just basically doesn't take hardly like three steps back maybe, and then he just sprints as quickly as he can and hits it.
I mean, where we went wrong is he didn't get the connection on it to start off with.
So,
but obviously, with the pace of the ball there, with the telltale signs, it was almost like, I mean, let's be honest, Neil, it just wasn't your day. And I don't mean to rub it in, but that is the reality of it, isn't it? And when stuff like that doesn't go your way, I mean, there's really not much helping you. You just kind of want the day over.
I agree. And that's why I said on the WhatsApp group, I said he's going to miss this, because you could see from the way Welbeck had been playing, from the way our front four had been playing, we weren't going to score if we'd stayed there all night. You know, it just wasn't going to happen. Even if they'd like let us there on our own, probably would have missed. And it felt like that.
Oh.
Look, the game overall, like some stats, right? So we had almost 60% possession, okay, away at Everton on their first day of their new stadium. We had, I think the shots were relatively even. I think there were 11 to 13. I think we had 13 shots. XG, Everton 1.84. I'm very shocked that it's that high, Everton's ones, but 1.84. Albion's 2.46, and we didn't score a single goal at 2.46.
Yeah.
I mean, we created a few chances that were really good quality chances, but you could still feel that it wasn't going to be our day. And look, this is where, I suppose this is where my moan and my frustration comes in, all right? So, first of all, yeah, you're right. We didn't deserve anything. We were poor in the final thirds and we just looked blunt, if I'm honest.
Mm.
No goals from open play in two games now either. You know, we scored a single penalty in the first game, so we haven't really scored what I would call a proper goal yet. But my biggest moan, Andy, about the whole thing,
go on,
isn't really the game at all. We had a bad day up front. Sometimes it happens. The front four were not on form in any way, and I get it. But when you see that the forwards aren't working and it's just not their day, you should make a change, right?
Well, you'd hope so.
Yeah. So my biggest frustration is how, with one league game into the season, we field this subs bench. Steele, keeper.
Mm-hmm.
Buscagli, defender. Coppola, defender. Cadioglu, defender-ish.
Mm.
Veltman, defender. Hinshelwood, midfielder, defender. Gomez, midfielder. Milner, midfielder, defender. Gruder, attacking midfielder, winger. Andy, one attacker we had on our bench, of which you wouldn't call him a striker. You would hardly call him a winger in some respects. He's more like an attacking midfielder. Oh, by the way, he only got on with 5 minutes to play as well.
Mm.
So with our fantastic squad that we've got, that we've been buying loads and loads of players, second game of the season, we don't have a single, what I would call a forward player on that bench. Not a single one, Andy.
Neil, do you know what? This is, I don't really know what to do because it's normally me digging at you, but you're digging yourself out. And I mean, I think the ratings for that game, obviously, Welbeck was the lowest rated player out of all of them. I think he got about a four, I think, on most of the reviews that I've seen. I don't know. I mean, I liken it to, you know, you used to talk about Palace in crisis because we haven't done anything. I think actually, I hate to say it, Neil, but I think you've done the opposite.
Look, we've got two young kids who are clearly not ready. He said that himself, right?
Yeah.
So we shouldn't expect too much from them, and that's fine. Okay, I get it. We've bought them, and hopefully at some point in the season, we'll see them play. Great, fine, tick box, great.
It's like buying an apple for its grown, mate.
Well, there you go.
You spent your money now.
But that's fine. If that's what we've done, that's fine. That's part of the plan, apparently, right?
Mm.
We've loaned out Ferguson to Roma. Evan Ferguson is currently playing Serie A football for Roma.
Oh, good for
Roma.
Him. Oh. Right, Neil was getting so annoyed.
No, hang on, right? The manager clearly doesn't fancy Abdulasima, right?
Yep.
So he's been on our books for about 4 years now.
Mm.
He still hasn't played a single game for Brighton. So why is he still here? He was good enough to play in Ligue 1 last season and Champions League and score in the Champions League last season, but he's not good enough for Brighton, apparently. So why is he still here? Why don't we sell him and get someone else in? Tommy Watson. Okay, fair enough. He's another young kid, right? We've bought him, been injured. We still haven't seen him. Hopefully, and I'm being told that he's being trained the last sort of 10 days or so. So maybe we'll see him next week in the next couple of fixtures. But still, we've not seen him, right? Goal scorers. Where are our goal scorers? Where are the ones?
Still at school.
Where are the ones that we're expecting to pin our hopes on? We've got a great veteran who can't last all season, played horrifically on the weekend. I'm not going to dig him out. He's been fantastic for us.
Yeah,
he had a bad day at the office. It happens to all of us. Or we've got a couple of teenagers. Where's the middle ground? Where's the player who's mid-20s, got some experience of playing either this league or another league? Where is that? That's what I'm saying. And that's why I'm really frustrated. He's playing Rutter as a striker. He's not a striker. He's a number 10. We all know it. He alluded to it himself, Hörsler. In the press conference on Thursday, he said, we're playing him there to see how it feels while we're trying to fix a few things with our younger players. So he says himself, we've got a hole. He knows we don't have a striker that's of the level we need for the Premier League. So unless this Simas kid, who's 19 years old, who's our number 9, given squad number 9, unless he is something amazing, which, let's be honest, he played for Nuremberg, Bundesliga 2 team last season. Nobody else was in for him. We bought him.
Well, hang on. How much was it, though? Like 30 million or something?
No, it wasn't that much. No. That's Kostulas you're thinking of. So the other guy is more of a classic striker, number 9, okay? And I'm sure he'll be fine. When you're trying to go for Europe and you're trying to be in the top 10 and you're trying to be in the top 6, let's be honest, that's what they're talking about aiming for. Mm. Pinning your hopes on a number 10 that's trying to play number 9 or a veteran striker isn't right.
It's a bit of a U-turn, Neil.
So what are we going to do?
Well, I mean, from, you know, you bragging about how you've got all this scouting network and this consultancy
point,
and all the other bits and
that's
pieces.
My point.
It feels like you played... It feels like you played FIFA like a 14-year-old, spent your budget, and then now you've got no strikers, but you've got 17 defenders.
Andy, budget isn't the issue. We've got the money. We've got loads
well, you
of
have.
Money. We have. We've got tons of money.
Are you going to spend it in the next
and
week,
And that's
though?
The question, mate.
Mm.
Money isn't an object, and I'm not boasting, but we've got plenty of money.
Well, you do, yeah, because you sell your best players.
Yeah, so what are we going to do with it?
Probably buy another couple of 16-year-olds.
So what are we going to do with it, Andy?
Yeah.
If we get to the middle of December... And the two Greek lads have both scored 10 league goals and they're fantastic and they're world-class and they're our next 100 million players, then fair enough, I'll eat humble pie.
Yeah.
And I hope they are. Don't get me wrong.
I mean, my
suggestion... But at this moment, we're missing that experience, that actual number nine experience that Herzer doesn't want to play the one we've got, so who are we going to get?
Yeah, I mean, my suggestion would be that I think you've got to change your... I think you've got to have a temporary pause in your philosophy on your transfers and buy someone for the now who can hit the back of the net,
yeah,
as opposed to worry about what you're going to sell them to Chelsea for later.
You're not wrong, mate. You're not wrong. After all the great business in the market, we've left a João Pedro-shaped hole, right?
Yeah.
It needs filling. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the upcoming fixtures we have, with still no sign of our new young attackers with an appearance... You know, it could be the 1st of October and we could still only have a point. Spurs, Man City, Chelsea, Bournemouth away is not an easy fixture.
There's not many easy fixtures, to be brutally honest, this year. And there's been a few surprises. But yeah, I mean, do you know what the issue is, though, right? You've got you were in the relegation zone. You're now in 18th, I think, 17th, yeah, something like that. Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's two games. But the problem is, though, it's the psychology of being at the bottom of that table and having all them fixtures ahead of you, having the issues that you've got in terms of not being able to get it over the line, you've got missing players.
We've got Man City next week, and then after that is the international break.
Which could be good for you.
Well, it could be good, but as you just said, it's that we've lost that game as well. We've got 1 point out of three, and then we've got 10 days away when half the squad are off playing international games.
Mm.
We've got no time with anyone. So... I'm not talking about the result. It was a bad day at the office. Yeah. I'm talking about the general quality of our squad has been fantastic up until now. But right at this moment, I think even Fabian Hertzler knows he's got a problem at that number nine and they need to sort it out quick.
Do you know what you've got to do, Neil? As you say to me all the time, trust the process. Brighton will sort it. And on that note, go and get some fresh air, son, and cool yourself down.
I prefer not to speak. If I speak, I will...
It's never too early for Lowe's Black Friday deals. Snag some of our biggest savings of the season right now, like 25% off select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees. And get yourself free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit before the Black Friday rush. Because everyone loves free stuff, right? Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 12/3, while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Be in trouble.
I think it's only fair now, Andy, to move on to what is your first ever European game.
Oh,
Crystal
mate.
Palace versus, is it Fredrikstad? Is that
Fredrikstad.
Fredrikstad, okay. Fredrikstad. And that was on Thursday night, wasn't it?
It was Thursday night. Went down there for, as you say, Palace's first ever legit European game. Even though we can't really call it a Conference League game yet, because the irony of the whole situation being that we're still qualifying for the Conference League. I know, ridiculous. I think if you discount the Intertoto Cup back in the 90s, it was our first home European game. So a big atmosphere. Look, it was lovely under the lights as well. Lineup terms... we talked about it a little bit earlier, but Lerma was drafted in defence. Richards was put on the bench. Can only imagine that he decided that we didn't need him for that game.
Yeah, it's just minutes, isn't it? Trying to make sure everyone gets the minutes.
But I think I'm obviously picking a midfielder, Lerma, to play defence, which he's done quite a few times now and done very well. It was an interesting move, that, but it paid off.
I think also, if you're playing a game... I could probably see Glasner's perspective that if you're playing a game where you expect to have the ball all the time, you expect the other team. I mean, realistically, this is practically a pub side you're playing compared to Palace. And so you should be the one having the ball. You should be the one not caught. They shouldn't be causing too many problems for you. Yeah, you should be winning 4-5, 6-7, 8-0 or something. So
I mean, they're a pub side who won the Norwegian League. The Norwegian Cup, which is why they're in that situation. But yes, they did lose 5-1 in the previous playoff to get into the Europa League. So But they weren't, mate, they weren't a walkover. And the reason is, and it's really funny, because all my mates who are on my WhatsApp group, as it were, from my school friends, a lot of them are Arsenal fans, Liverpool fans, you know, and so on. And the message that I got after this game was, how do you like it playing against a low block now?
Yes.
Right?
That's a very good point.
You've got your own medicine there. And it was very interesting because we're not used to seeing Palace with the ball that much. We're not used to being frustrated. But also, we still got something out of it. And I don't think there were too many squeaky bum moments out of all of this, really.
I mean, there shouldn't be, shouldn't there, really?
No, mate, anything can happen, can't it? I think Sosa started for Mitchell, which was interesting.
What was he like?
I liked him.
Yeah.
And also, I don't know the official stats on this, or whether it was just because where I was sat and he was right in front of me, it felt like he had an awful lot of the ball.
Well, I watched a bit of the game on TV. I was really bored. I had nothing else to
do. You saw me on telly, didn't you?
I did see you on telly. Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I see him every 5 minutes, and then suddenly I turn the TV on and there he is as well.
I don't mean to digress, Neil, but I forgot to mention this, actually. So it's a bit of a surprise for you. Not only was I on telly on Thursday night, Ashley made it on BBC Radio 5 Live on Sunday as well.
What?
Got interviewed.
What do you mean? How did we not lead with this at the beginning of the episode?
Yeah,
why are we talking about this now?
Me and my son got interviewed on our thoughts on Palace's transfer policy and whether we thought we were going to win the game on Radio 5 Live.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so, mate, I'm just a media mogul.
That's
right,
fantastic.
Now.
And did you talk about the pod and say, is the podcast I do?
I mentioned the pod. And I think the only slight issue that we had was that we didn't make the final cut.
Hang on.
Yeah.
Hang on. So actually, what you're saying is, you're just saying to me that you were interviewed by someone on BBC Radio 5 Live.
Yeah.
And there's no actual proof.
I'm still looking for the proof because I'm still hope it is there somewhere. But no, we got interviewed, but we didn't. I don't think we made it on air. Yeah. Anyway, we were on telly, Neil, and it was a great game. Tell us your thoughts.
Well, what I thought was, first of all, they looked poor, but they, like a lot of Scandinavian sides, physically, they were very imposing, I thought, and they were very fit. And I think you said this last week as well, they're halfway through their season.
Oh, mate, yeah.
They looked fitter, and I think that's understandable. But they didn't have much when it comes to a side. But when I watched Borna Sosa, the reason I wanted to talk about it was when I watched him, I think they did purposely go to the left-hand side more with him. And the reason for that is because they've got the ball. They've got possession. He's a better crosser of the ball than probably most of the players.
Yeah.
So they're trying, that's the tactic. Get it over to him, get the ball into the box that way, because they can't counterattack because there's no attack. So for them, I think that was a very good tactic to try and have a go. And that's the reason probably why Lerma was playing as well, because he could move up into midfield and have a go. I mean, I noticed he had a couple of shots that went almost out the ground, but it wasn't a bad performance.
Well, that's the point though, mate. We were forced to shoot from range.
Yeah.
Their defence was solid, to be brutally honest.
Yes,
and we
yes.
played against some of the best defences in the Premier League.
Yeah.
And they were very, very good at the back. They really, really were. They gave us no space. They played a tactical game. And I think the bodies behind the ball, and I think we had to play it wide, mate. It was wide and long shots until we got our chance. I think there was a couple of good chances for Mateta and Deveni, but 0-0 at half time. But it did feel at that point where it was like it was a matter of time until we were going to find our way through, is the truth. Second half, after coming out of the block strong, dominating the game, then came, Neil, our first ever European goal. After a Sosa corner, Hughes tries a half volley. I don't know if you saw this. It was one of the ones where it's quite a little bit of a calamity. It's like Hughes gets this crossing from Sosa, does a half volley. It was headed away. Hughes is still stood exactly the same place where he half volleyed it.
I saw that.
Did it again. Went back in again. And obviously, this time, Mateta's like that. Look, can we stop playing this game now? And just intercepts it and gets it straight on.
Yeah.
And to be fair, shots like that, the only way you're getting through all of them players, the 10 players on the outside of the field that are in front of them, you're going to deflect a ball and kind of, that's the only way you can get through.
Well, as your mate said, this is how it feels.
Yeah,
Yeah. I don't like it this way round, but it's fine. Look, we continued to press. We tried to break it down. They defended well. Let's not pretend, because we were missing Eze, right?
You're missing creativity.
He was meant to be playing that game.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. He pulled a sickie, right? Don't hate him for it, because obviously, clearly, someone from the insurance team of Arsenal was like, you ain't playing that game.
Yeah.
But he said he did work for him well. He was there watching, but we did miss him. And also, we didn't prepare that game without him. Let's just remember that's a good point, right?
Yeah, yeah.
On that afternoon, he was like, I ain't playing. So, yeah, Lerma hit the post with a really, really good shot.
I saw that, yeah.
Could have been two. Ultimately, 1-0 up. We've got the advantage. We could have got more. We could have made it a lot easier for ourselves for Thursday coming up. My man of the match, a man who I met sat on a wall a couple of weeks ago at Wembley, Mr. Will Hughes. Brilliant. Absolutely superb game. I also believe that he was probably up there for man of the match on Sunday as well. Great performance. He was everywhere. Great work rate. I think, look, we had 74% possession.
Jeez.
When have I ever said that?
Yeah.
25 attempts to score, 5 on target.
Wow.
XG of 2.3, 2.5, something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, we could have got more out of it, mate. But I mean, look, Man City, Liverpool, and all the other top teams say that about us. So there you go.
So this is a really good point. More generally, when we talk about your journey now in Europe, you've got the next leg coming up.
On Thursday?
That's Thursday night. What do you expect to happen there, realistically?
I think another game like we've just witnessed, where neither of us are going to particularly want the ball.
Yeah.
I think we'll take the ball because we're probably better at it.
Mm.
But I think Glasner will make a couple of tactical changes. We can't make any changes in the team in terms of if any new signings, God forbid, do actually get signed before Thursday, we can't play them.
No.
So what I do believe will happen is that Roman Essay should get a start.
Yep, good point.
And we should go for his creative flair and give it a bit of an extra... bit of extra oomph there. I think he'll start with Sosa and Munez, one on each side. And I do think we'll find our way through there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hardly an away game. They've got 15,000 seats in that place.
I don't expect much to happen. I think Glasner would be happy with a 0-0. I mean, he doesn't need to worry. If you've got the opening goal now, I think that's it. But for the record, I reckon you'll win 1-0 there as well.
Yeah.
So I think aggregate will be 2-0.
I don't know. Let's see what happens. I'm very optimistic. And you've got to be optimistic being a pilot. Apart from our transfer policy right now, everything seems to be going all right.
Andy, you've got to be optimistic when it comes to the Conference League. You should absolutely, as I've been saying for weeks, you've got to be in the final realistically.
And mate, it's our first ever European away day on Thursday.
Yeah, that's going to be exciting. Yeah, I agree.
Look, I would have loved to have gone to it, mate, if I'd have had more time.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
Not an easy place to get to.
No.
I did have a look.
There'll be opportunities, though. It'd be really interesting to see the teams you get to play once the draw has all been sorted and things. It's an exciting times, look. Realistically, obviously, it pains me, but it is exciting times.
Yeah.
And now that all the mess of the cast stuff is out of the way, just forget about it. Just enjoy the season for what it is.
Nothing we can do, is there?
And what you've got ahead of you, hopefully, is a crazy week when it comes to transfers, and then a squad big enough to be able for you to play twice a week.
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. And one thing that is apparent right now, Brighton, you might have been organised, you might have been sensible, you might have got all your business affairs in order, but Palace have got an exciting week now. For you, hardly any point watching Deadline Day on Sky Sports. For me, I'm living and breathing it, Neil.
So let's talk about the transfers. Let's talk about all those rumours that you've got going on, because there must be about 1,000 this week. So talk to me. What have you got any confirmed transfers, by the way, before we go on to rumours?
Well, obviously, Eze's left.
Good point, obviously. Eze has left, finally. That saga is done. Okay.
Yeah, sad day for Palace fans. What is it? I mean, let's just quickly go over it. 167 appearances, 40 goals for Palace.
Wow.
He was bought for 17 million, Neil, from QPR. Gave us 50% of his prime years, contributed so much to the club, right?
Yeah.
He got his England call-up, scores at the FA Cup final, contributed to keeping us up some of them dodgy years in the early times.
Yeah.
And we've sold him for £68 million. To be honest, I know that there's a lot of haters at the moment in terms of our policy and the way we do things, but another one's gone for a big amount of money, both on and off the pitch. You've got to call that a success,
right? Yeah.
I just hope and pray that Palace get another baller from our area
to keep that going, or another person who's going to keep our identity. And that's the bit that I really hope, after the days of Doogie Freeman and all the other bits and pieces.
Yeah, I get you.
I just hope that not too much changes.
Yeah, no, I agree. Replacements, rumours, what we got?
This is a bit tricky because I genuinely believe that by the time I finish talking about this, it's changed again. because I think we've got so many. I think we're in for four or five.
Well, our listeners know this is how it works, right? We have to put our names out there and say, look, these are the ones we think. These are the rumours. These are the leads that we think are the ones that have got the most legs. So give me a short list. What do you reckon?
Well, look, there's no secret that El Kanous is leaving Leicester. He didn't play the game at Charlton because of transfer speculation. That was confirmed.
Yep.
Reports are that we've agreed terms and that we were deciding whether to proceed or not. And this is why I've got a feeling we might have struggled with transfers in the last few weeks if we do this. apparently, we put a 32 million offer in. Tottenham, after losing out on Eze, I mean, this is going to be a lovely story. Apparently, are now having a look at him themselves. Wouldn't be surprised if they gazump that one. but apparently, we've left him on hold exploring other options. There we go.
Blimey.
He's apparently told his mates, as I've heard, that he's going to Palace. So let's see what happens there.
Okay. Well, that's promising.
Well, yeah. There's now another couple of other options. There's a new one now, which is Yemi Pino. Have you heard of him?
Yes, I do. Yes.
22-year-old Spaniard.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. Blimey. Are you in for him? Is that actually happening?
Plays for Villarreal. Apparently, he is Glasner's number one priority.
I wouldn't be surprised if he's number one priority. He's a great little footballer. He's tiny. He's absolutely tiny. But he's a great little footballer. He's sort of a right-sided midfielder winger, if that makes sense. Like in the style that you guys play, I think he would probably be in that hole where Eze sort of drops into and sort of plays off the striker and things like that. He's a great little player.
I mean, he was the youngest player ever to win a UEFA club competition. He won it at, age 19 when they won the Europa League in 2021.
You with the stats.
Yeah. I mean, I'm getting excited because I can't really see this happening, but I wish it would.
Well, I think that's a fair, when you get excited about a possible signing and you think to yourself, no, it can't happen, it must be a good one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You think to yourself, oh, no, we can't get him. But that's he's a great little player, Andy, I have to be honest.
Well, apparently
that would upset me if you get him.
Mate, there's conversations, don't know whether anything's going to come of it. And do you know what the other thing that genuinely got me excited, which was probably more so, actually, and it's a bit weird, Conor Gallagher. Conor Gallagher has come up today. Well, last night there was rumours. Today it's all over everywhere, including the reliable sources, which are saying that we're in for him on a potential loan. But apparently, his club, Atletico Madrid, obviously moved there for £42 million from Chelsea.
Yep.
He's been struggling for game time there, and apparently the club would prefer to sell as opposed to loan.
I mean, they've bought big over the last couple of seasons. They've had a lot of expenditure at Atletico Madrid.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm surprised. I thought he'd stay there a bit longer, but I wouldn't be surprised, though, if he does go, that there'd be quite a few clubs after him, not just Palace.
Yeah, there's quite a few Premier League clubs that potentially are after him. However, don't forget he had that successful loan spell, which I would go as far as say kickstarted his career, along with quite a few others that we've had on from Chelsea over the years.
It's a bit of a drop-off, though, mate. Champions League, almost winning the La Liga title with Atletico Madrid, and then going back to Palace. For a lot of players, they wouldn't want to do that. In their head, that would be a drop-off. You know,
going back to London, going back to a club where all his mates are, and an area for his family and all that kind of stuff. And also, I think there's that other part of it, isn't it? I mean, yes, I think he played about 30 games last season.
Mm.
But what do you want to do? Do you want to play 30 games where you play 10 minutes or 15 minutes a game? Or do you want to play 30 games where you play 30 games?
Yeah, no, I get it.
And actually contribute to something. And also give himself a shot for the England
Cup
team again and for World Cup, because Conor Gallagher knows damn well that if you're playing at Palace, you have got a chance of proving yourself, and you're in the eye. So let's see what happens with that one. And there was one funny enough that you sent me earlier as well, which is it's a defender, JD Canvert.
Yeah,
he's from Toulouse.
Yes,
19-year-old French centre back.
Yeah.
So obviously he's played for the French youth team. They're only asking for about, only mere change here, €20 million.
Yeah, I mean, it was an interesting one I saw because I knew Villa were after him for a while. He's sort of at their level that he's a younger player as well. He's not someone that maybe you could argue would come straight into the first team. But for Palace, with the number of games that they've got European games, et cetera, it makes sense to be looking for someone like that at that level of experience and that price range. That one I feel has got legs. I think that's an option that probably could happen very soon and very quick. Well, let's be honest, it'll have to happen quickly.
I think we're in for a defender regardless of the Gueye situation.
Yeah.
Right. I don't think that this is as clear-cut simple as Gueye goes, defender comes in. I think we're after someone anyway. Obviously, Villa put in a bid for him last week. It got rejected, but they didn't go up to the 20 million valuation. So look, let's see. And I think, do you know what? Every moment now, if you have a look online, there's new names, new people circling. One thing that has happened today, which hasn't been announced by the club, but very good sources say it's a done deal, is an outgoing. We know from Glasner's press conferences when he's been talking about the lack of squad depth, but he said that they'd already agreed for two players to go out, one of which we believe was Edouard, although they're not going to let him go until someone else comes in.
Right.
But França, it was another one that they'd said can go. They've been working on a loan deal. Rumours are saying now, and reports from Brazil, that it's a done deal. He's gone out on loan to Vasco da Gama FC, Brazilian team, straight loan, no option to buy. We want him back July 2026. This will be for his fitness, right? He's one of the upcoming stars. Mate, he's played like three games for us. And obviously, we wanted his wages off the bill.
Yeah.
They're going to take 70% of his salary, apparently. So that, to me, is he's gone. Let's spend some money now.
Yeah, that sounds sensible. And it's good for him to get some game time. So, okay, cool. That's a lot.
Tell us about Brighton, Neil.
So Andrew Moran, or Moran, depending on how you pronounce it, he's a Republic of Ireland midfielder, 21 years old. Last season and the season before that, he's been in the Championship. He played for Stoke last season, played nearly all their games. Really good little midfielder, but I think he's Championship level, if I'm completely honest. I mean, he might develop more as he gets older. He secured a loan, get this, to LAFC.
Well, that's a nice one, isn't it?
That's lovely, isn't it? He's there until January, which is when their season ends. So he's got a lovely little time now in the sun in LA, playing alongside Heung-min Son, who just joined as well. So
that's a weird one, that.
I know.
He ain't going to want to come back.
Exactly. He must be rubbing his hands, mustn't he, when the call came in. Yeah, it's LAFC. We want Andrew Moran. What? Sorry, what?
How weird.
Yeah, love it. So good luck to him anyway. We'll see what happens when he comes back in January. I expect he'll probably get sold by then, but we'll see. So that was it, mate. There's literally nothing else going on. No sign of a striker coming in. So we'll have to wait and see what happens there.
Oh, yes!
So we've got this week's fixtures coming up. We probably need to talk about them.
Busy week.
Yeah. So we've got midweek fixtures. Obviously, you guys have got Fredrikstad, the return.
Yeah, did something confuse me, Neil?
What's that, mate?
Well, I had to Google it earlier
because
I know that you said about the upcoming fixtures and I noticed that you've got a game against Oxford, and I was very confused by that because I thought Oxford aren't the Premier League, must be a cup game.
Yeah.
If you've got a cup game, why haven't we got a cup game? I mean, you're laughing. I mean, it is a dig, but I didn't realise it was a dig. Well, I actually genuinely had to do my homework on this. I didn't realise that we got out of the second round.
Yeah, it was one of the joys that we had when we went into the Europa League. It was, you can use it as a dig if you want, but
it wasn't meant to be. I mean, I know it was coming out like that, but it was actually something that I've learned this week.
Yeah, so any team that's in Europe misses the second round of the Carabao Cup, and they come in the third round. Yeah, so it's... we have to face lowly Oxford. We've got a trip away to Oxford.
But that might kickstart your season, mate.
Who knows, mate?
Do you know, things
happen. Depends who plays, doesn't it, though? Well, do you know what I mean? Like, I'm really confused at the moment, but I definitely hope so.
I hope
we see Tommy Watson. I hope we see at least one Greek person on the pitch somewhere, even if he's just the physio or something. And I hope we see some goals because they need to get some confidence up, as you said.
I believe that the kickstart to our season last year and the success brewing was Glasner playing full strength teams against lower opposition and gaining the confidence, gaining it, and then moving on. And I think that a good game against Oxford could be the success.
Andy, I think that's a really good idea. I just know he won't do that.
Well,
he won't do that. He'll
swap
the team.
He's a silly sausage.
Yeah. a silly sausage he is. We will see. The good news is it is going to be on TV, so I get to watch it. And I'll give you a report next week on it. But hopefully at least some goals and through to the next round with a bit of luck.
Yeah, you should be, shouldn't you?
We spoke about the Fredrikstad game a little bit. So your ultimate prediction is what? What do you think the score will be?
I actually agree with you. I think it's going to be a really close one, like 1-0, yeah. If not maybe 2-0. Look, if we get an early one, it might be 2, but I'm going for 1-0.
Yeah.
And obviously aggregate it'd be 2-0. So okay. Job done, right?
That's fair. And I think with a Brighton game, I'm going for 2-1. I think it's going to be quite a close game. I think I think if we play some of the other guys that haven't had the minutes, I think he'll be a bit rusty. So
okay.
And then we've got the Premier League.
Oh mate, Palace have got Villa. The game I look forward to so much. I mean, there will come a day where this backfires.
But you're travelling to Villa Park, aren't you?
We're away. I mean, Villa have not won a game against Palace in their last 5 meetings.
Yeah, you've got something over at the moment, you blimey.
Well, 16 goals over the last 5 games, Neil, is what we got. I mean, it actually... Do you remember when we got into the Europa League and Villa fans were genuinely terrified that we were going to come up against them in Europe.
Yeah.
So the Villa fans were cheering when we got kicked out.
Yeah.
My prediction, 2-1 Palace. I don't think it's going to be quite as convincing it has been in the previous games, but I'm really looking forward to that one, especially if Villa continue on their little bit of a rocky road at the moment. It could be a good time to play them.
No, I think that's absolutely fair. I really do. I mean, I think from Brighton's point of view, we've got Man City, as I spoke about earlier at the beginning.
All right.
But no, hang on. You did your stats, right?
No, you're right. Go
no,
on.
We actually do all right against Man City.
Yeah.
It sounds ridiculous, I know.
No, go on.
But okay, let's talk about the last 5 fixtures against Man City, mm-hmm. right? Man City have won twice. We've won once, and there's been 2 draws. So it's not as uneven as it sounds, okay?
Well, it's the way you've said the stats, Neil.
What do you mean?
You've won 1 in 5.
Yeah, Man City have won 2 against us in 5.
Yeah.
And 2 of them are in draws. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so
Man City have not won in 3 out of 5 times against Brighton. They should be beating us every time.
Mate, you should go into statistics because, I mean, you've just heavily...
Maybe I should go into government. Might work better.
Yeah, it's a bit of spin there, Neil.
Well, look, okay, forget that. Let me try a different stat, okay?
Go on.
At home to Man City, okay? The last game we played, we beat them 2-1.
That's a good stat.
Yeah. Is that okay? Can we just leave that there?
I think we should leave it there. Yeah, don't look too much further.
That's fine. I'm not positive, mate. As you can tell from my frustrations earlier, I'm not positive. But the one thing I can tell you is that they'll give it a go and it'll be an exciting game. It'll be an open game. I'll be there and I'll be cheering my team on because I love them. So it's just the way I have to be, isn't it?
I wish you luck. And I mean, look, whatever really happens in that game, from my perspective, I'm all right with it because I like seeing Man City lose, as does a lot of, you know, the humbling of Man City.
Mm.
I like seeing Brighton lose. And I think whatever happens, mate, I wish you luck. And do you know what? You're a mate of mine. Have a good day out.
Cheers, so, mate.
That's all I can say, really. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't really hold out much hope. I actually think it could be a draw.
Oh, I'll take that at the moment. I really would. As long as we score a goal, I'll be happy.
No, I don't know if it will. I think it might be 0-0, mate.
Oh, okay, fine. Look, we're going to wrap it up there. Now, a little bit note about next week. We're going to be back a little bit later because we want to make sure that we've got all of the to's and fro's from the transfer market. So the transfer market shuts on Monday, the 1st of September. So we will probably be recording a little later after that so we know exactly what's going on with everything. And that's us done for another episode of Seagull Eagle. Thank you for listening.
Make sure to follow the show so you don't miss the next episode when it drops.
We'll be back next week, as I said, to discuss the upcoming games from Palace and Brighton.
And we'll review all the late transfer action for both clubs.
Now, don't forget, you can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook and X. So just search Seagull Eagle and get the conversation started.
And drop us an email at seagulleaglepodcast@gmail.com.
We'll see you next week. But until then,
Seagull Eagle!
Life is unpredictable, but preparing for the unexpected shouldn't be. Take ownership of your life planning with Policy Genius to help your loved ones have a financial safety net in case something happens to you. They offer life insurance policies starting at just $276 a year for $1 million in coverage. Don't wait for life to make other plans. Protect your family today. Head to policygenius.com. That's policygenius.com.